As you all know now, my name is Soyeon Hooman. Good afternoon, everyone. And this doesn't work. And it works now. Just a little information about me that also you know who is talking. I'm an associate researcher and lecturer at Vienna University of Economics, Institute of Information Systems and New Media, and also a cognitive science lecturer at the Department of Philosophy at the University of Vienna. I have a diverse background. I have studied computer science and artificial intelligence, cognitive science, which I'm also teaching, philosophy of science, and also science, technology, and society, which is actually sociology of technology or sociology of science. And I have worked in different universities and research institutes here in Austria and also in other countries. And also I have coached different startups, have worked with UN and so on. Have a more or less, I would say, research background in general, but also a little applied research. My talk today is in general about personal data processing on internet, which means I would also say maybe privacy on internet or digital privacy, but it's beyond privacy as you will see. The talk includes a part of a project that we are running at the moment, which is called Expedite Project. The full title is Exploring Opportunities and Challenges for Emerging Personal Data Ecosystems, Empowering Humans in the Age of the GDPR, a Roadmap for Austria. And this is the logo. It is funded by FFG, Austrian Research Promotion Agency. And we have WEU is a part of the project, Privacy and Sustainable Computing Lab of WEU in general, and also Technical University of Vienna, and also Own Your Data, which is an association in Austria, are involved. The general idea behind the project, which you also see some parts of it today, is to explore what are the barriers and drivers of and new kinds of personal data ecosystems that we might build in future. It includes technical aspects, many technical aspects, but it also tries to cover social aspects that are needed and different legal aspects that should be considered and so on. You will see. Anyway, I start with the current state of the personal data processing on internet. Today, more personal data is being produced than ever. Everyone has a cell phone, everyone has a laptop, and we are just producing more and more data. And as you might know, the business model of or data model of many of the companies, many of the service providers, is to perceive personal data as a siloed commodity that is owned by companies, not people. Not the ones who are producing them. We call them data controllers. And the idea is that, okay, we collect more and more personal data, and that's our business. The one who has more personal data will win the business game. I would call this normal personal data ecosystems, and we can maybe conceptualize them as in this diagram. We have people and different data controllers, different companies, but they should not necessarily be companies. And they collect data. And as you see, some of them, like this one, even have no direct connection with the people, and they just trade data, they just analyze data, and so on. That's the picture that we have nowadays, more or less. Not everywhere, but more or less, this is the dominant picture. But it has problems. One of the biggest problems that it has is security. And I don't want to start from privacy because it also comes, but it has technical problems. When you put that much of data together, it's a very big security problem. And these kind of headlines nowadays are very common, like Google shuts down Google Plus because of data leak, or I don't know, Facebook says 5 million users are influenced by a security problem. 50 million. And how many people live in Austria? Like 8-9 million? And you said these numbers are huge numbers, and then nowadays they are normal headlines. Beyond that, we also have privacy problem. We are sharing a lot of data, a lot of personal data, with people that sometimes we even don't know. They are tracking users, and we have not really good understandable consents that we give, and then we don't know what happens with our data. But it's not about only every single person's personal data, but also about our friends, our colleagues, anyone who is in connection with us. If I ask you, for example, could you please give me, I don't know, your partner's telephone number to me, you would ask me why. It's a very well-known example. But in the digital world, you install an app and ask you to be able to access to your contacts and then have the information of all of your friends. You should then think, okay, the telephone number of my friend doesn't belong to me. It's her or his privacy and his data or her data. I should first ask that person, but we don't do that. And the data ownership, the concept that we have in digital world is completely different than the normal world, like the real physical world. Another issue that we have here is the concept and the understanding that we have nowadays that this is changing our societies. People have our data, they can make models, and then they can intentionally provide us with different types of advertisements. Then they can influence the way that people vote. And then the question is, do we have an agency? Do we have freedom? Do we have autonomy? And so on. And it doesn't matter who people are voting for or who is advertising. The very concept is important. And we have the problem of dominance. We have Google, we have Facebook, Apple, Amazon, and some others that have huge amount of data, that have money. And if you have a brilliant idea, it's very hard for you to just pursue that idea, because you have to compete with all of these giant companies. One idea to solve this, and it has been around for a while, is to change towards more human-centric PDEs, or personal data ecosystems. And as you can see here, we have personal data of people saved by them, saved somewhere that is under their control. It's a simple idea. And we knew it since, I don't know, 10 years or 15 years or maybe even more. But it's not that easy to implement it. Plus, the question is, even if we implement this, would this solve the problem? One version of this human-centric PDs also could include apps. Not only data, but also apps. But normally they are simple apps, like your calendar and so on. Even moving to these ones are not easy. Because if someone has already used Facebook, for example, for years, and all of your friends are there, it's very hard for you to switch to a human-centric PDE. Or if you have been using, I don't know, Google Calendar for many years, you want all of that your data, which is there, because it's your personal records. The good news is that we have GDPR. It could be helpful. And I don't say it can be helpful, because we don't know. It's not very clear how GDPR would be implemented. In our project, in Expedite, we have sent many requests based on GDPR. Based on GDPR, you have a right of data portability, Article 20. It means that you can ask a company to provide you with all of your personal information that they have saved. But the question is how they would respond. And we have sent out in the Expedite project hundreds of requests, and we have received all different types of answers from companies. Some of them just ignore it. Some of them send you PDF files. And then based on the GDPR, it should be machine readable. And PDF is machine readable, but you cannot import it somewhere else. Then you don't know what would be the consequences of GDPR. It's good. It's a very good starting point. But we really don't know how it would be implemented. That's a part of our research. Maybe in 6 months or 1 year, I would be able to report to you that at least in Austria, this is the way that GDPR is practiced. But anyway, GDPR could be a solution for being able to transport data from different platforms to a human-centric platform. And then you can imagine you have moved all of your data here. Imagine we have solved this problem, okay? Still, there are bigger problems that would make it very difficult for us to really use our human-centric personal data ecosystems. The idea of this kind of ecosystems is that this person, this user, that human, is responsible for his data or her data, and the person has also control of their data. Very nice. Maybe you say that's what we want. The problem is, first of all, if you want personalization, and this is what we want, actually, in many cases, you don't want to search internet and get the same search results as anyone else, then maybe in this kind of architecture, you still need external services. Second, not every person has the training to be able to manage this kind of ecosystems. And still, this kind of ecosystems are consent-based. You give the person the control, but still it works based on the consents of people. And do we really can remember all of our consents on internet? Can anyone say that? Then again, you are trying to solve a problem and maybe cause many other problems. Maybe this is even worse for the security of the person or privacy of the person. We have GDPR, but again, the GDPR also tries to solve some problems and also makes some other problems. This is the definition of lawful consent based on the GDPR. It should be valid, freely given, informed, specific, clear, and active. Have you ever done that? We just click on privacy policies or terms of use pages and just agree without reading them. Research shows actually 94%, about 94% of people don't read these things. And more than 99%, almost everyone, cannot answer questions if you asked some simple questions after reading this terms privacy policies or terms of use pages. And if you just write some meaningless sentences in the middle, people cannot detect them. More than 99%. And then now we expect people to give us valid, freely given, informed, specific, clear, and active consents, either in the normal PDEs or in human-centric ones. Doesn't matter. They're working on based on the same concept. Maybe even in the other one, in the normal one, you have someone to just think that he or the company, the entity, is responsible for your data. In the human-centric, it could be even worse. And also think about a concept that Walzer has conceptualized. He talks about complex equalities in society. The idea is that we have different spheres in the society, and if you have power in one of them, you should not be able to use that in the others. If you have a lot of money, you should not be able to also change the, choose the president, and so on. But what happens here, doesn't matter in the normal PDEs, in the human-centered PDEs, in this very basic version that I explained, or even based on GDPR, you have companies who have access to a very big amount of processing power, and normal people who are in many cases, or in most of the cases, are not expert. They have very limited cognitive ability. They have no training, not enough time. And then you say that, now you can control your data based on GDPR or based on anything. And this is not fair. I see, or our group see, societies, democracies as this, I don't know, party. There are many different actors, human actors and non-human actors. There are many different people with different ideas of how to dance, or maybe which music we should produce or listen to or dance with. And then the idea is, okay, in the same time, we want to have fun. We should find this harmony. And if you think about society, we should push and pull and discuss and justify in order to make it better. At least for me, this is the new understanding of democracy. It's not just about having a box that we vote, put just our votes there, and then the majority can do whatever they want, or I don't know, the person who has power can do the same thing. We think in order to solve this, we also should empower this person. And one option for empowering it is to providing similar facilities, similar equipment for that person. So a cognitive system, an artificial cognitive system, can support the person in order to manage their data. We call it cognitive personal assistance system. We are working, actually, in our research, we're working on the architecture of that, how it can be implemented, and so on. I don't want to enter to that. And it's very sophisticated, and we have not solved it. No one has ever solved this. We have had assistant systems since maybe 20 years ago, or maybe more, but normally they are very rule-based, normally they are very specific, very domain-specific, and so on. And here we need something that can help a person in different occasions, in different contexts. And we think we should also consider the nature of human need satisfaction and value fulfillment. And this slide is intentionally like this, that it's very hard to read it, because this is a very hard question. I have an example for you. Just think about privacy. We had a full week of privacy talks this week, and then after 1 week, if I ask you what is privacy, what would be the answer? I think it's fair to say that privacy is different for every single person of us. It's different for you, it's different for you. And also, it's not the same for you as a single person in all times and locations. It depends on the context. Why do you need privacy? And normally we think about value fulfillment, or we think about need satisfaction more than the need, the very abstract privacy, or the very abstract food, or the very abstract freedom. We like to interact in this world with the things that we can assign to privacy, or things that invade our privacy. The good point about trying to develop this kind of systems is that maybe using them, we could change the perspective. Maybe we could consider human needs and human values in management of our PDEs or data, but also beyond that, this system can provide people with many different novel services that nowadays maybe partially are provided by third parties and maybe have never provided for the people, because you don't want to share all of your data in order to get that with someone else to get that services. And if you have something like this, which is controlled by you, and you can set it up, but in the same time it is an active, it learns as well. It could be a good solution. We don't know, we are trying. The good news is that in the last years, especially in the last 10 years, we have a lot of advancements in cognitive science, different branches of cognitive science, including artificial intelligence, neuroscience, psychology, linguistics, and so on. Maybe all these advancements would help us to make that system. We are doing our best. Another important aspect is that we also, I think at least, partially have public pressure. After all this news headlines that I showed you, I don't know, like this Facebook problems, this all of the influences that these kind of companies have had in elections and so on, at least a portion of people are very aware of this problem. Maybe they push. And again, remember my dance party. Maybe a part of people say, ah, maybe the music is not that good. Let's change the music. This is a good driver. Also GDPR. I criticized GDPR, but I do think that it is a good starting point. It also causes new problems. This is one of the actors in our dance party. If it's not good, we should push it and change it. But it's better than having nothing. And it's a one step forward. Another driver could be anti-dominance policies. If you read all the negotiations that happened before enforcement of GDPR, one of the motivations, at least in European Union, but also in other countries, was reduction of dominance. We have now companies which are mainly based in Silicon Valley, mainly based in California or in United States, that are dominant in the market, and they are collecting more and more data and also producing more and more money. Maybe the general policy in Europe, in China, in Russia, I don't know, in many other countries, to reduce this dominance would support this kind of research, this kind of technological advancements towards a more human-centric approach. One option is also copying whatever we have and making a European version of that. But I don't think that that would work. Also, I don't think that that would be a good idea. Then we have the same problems. Another driver, I think, is that nowadays we have more and more personal devices which are getting more and more powerful. It was very hard to imagine like 20 years ago or 10 years ago that this problems started, that we could run a sophisticated artificial intelligence agents on a normal PC. But nowadays we can hope that we would be able to do that. Or we have also cloud technologies that can be very helpful to provide infrastructure for pushing towards human-centric or cognitive human-centric, actually, PDEs. And also we have cryptography. Strong cryptography in the last years has been developed, and I think this could also be coupled with many of the other points that I said. And this could be very helpful. And all this could be driver for innovation. I hope that many startups, many, I don't know, university projects would start based on this concept. And then we would have new tools, new, I don't know, services based on this concept. And then hopefully governments would pay more money for that. And people would use it. And these are, I really like to give you this list, actually. These are the list of drivers that I think are important, but there are many more. I talked about all of them. Public attention on digital privacy, advancements in cognitive science, enforcement of the GDPR, anti-dominance policies, advancements in personal devices and technologies, advancement in strong cryptographic systems, advancements in internet infrastructure, and also these systems can be enablers for innovation. But there are also challenges. One of the biggest challenges, I think, are big companies, the ones that are dominant at the moment. If you want to change the dynamic in your dance party, you should also deal with the people who have power at the moment. How we would do that? That's our future work. And it's complex. If you consider this as brain, if you consider this as society, it's complex. It's not that easy. I can make that diagram and say, look, this is my cognitive human-centric personal data ecosystem. Let's make it. It's not that easy. Thousands of researchers are working on this concept. And we are just at the beginning. Even if you look at one small part of this, we don't know how to do that. We have done many things in the last 10 years, but we need to do many more. Again, I have a list of challenges. And I think these challenges are more important than drivers. Because even with having all of that drivers, with these challenges, maybe we never do that. We never would succeed to have cognitive, human-centered, personal data ecosystems. Or if I just translate this, to solve the privacy problem on the internet. Or to have systems that would be able to satisfy human needs or fulfill their values based on the nature of humans. The technical barriers that we have, as I told you, a very basic one is development of the cognitive personal assistant systems. And we are working on that, and we hope that we would be able to do that. Also, it should be open and distributed. We need many different sets of protocols and agreements in order to make this an open system, not another platform. And also we need to do this automation of data portability that I talked about. How we can take our data automatically from one system and take it to another one, considering that companies don't want to share them, at least at the moment. And also there could be many security problems that should be solved, and many other technical barriers and challenges. But again, remember our dance party. We do have instruments, but it's not only instruments. We have also humans. This is a social environment. And I think we should solve everything together and do our best to do that actually. From a user-centric perspective or human-centered perspective, first of all, we have to teach people, we have to educate them to consider this approach as a valid approach, as something that maybe they could use. People have used this, like the normal PDEs, Facebook, Google, and so on, for 20 years, I don't know, for many years. This kind of services, I mean. Now they have to change their perspective. Also, it's not only about users, it's also about the governments, policymakers, and so on. Then research shows that many people don't care about their values, especially in digital world. Like, they do talk about privacy, freedom, agency, autonomy, but their real action is different. How we can embody these values in people's real-world actions or digital actions is another difficulty. Also, we should teach to people or convince them to pay for their values. Or maybe governments should do that. Nowadays, everyone thinks that for sure, like searching internet should be free. Like, or I don't know, navigation should be free, social networks should be free, everything is free. And then you give your data away to companies. And as you saw, this is not just your personal data, because then they can use that personal data in order to influence you to vote differently, and then it would have social impact. But then if I ask you, no, you have to pay in order to get services. But this kind of services would be value-based. Would people pay? We don't know. Most probably not. Then one solution would be to say that, look, these are basic human rights. Everyone in the world should be able to search internet freely and also free of charge and everywhere, and also in a personalized way. Then maybe governments should provide this kind of, maybe this is like water, maybe this is like electricity. All of these services maybe should be public services. That would be also one solution. And there are many other user-centric challenges. We also have socioeconomic challenges. As I said, like competing with the big players, existing ones. Also, it's not clear, the legal basis of this kind of systems that I'm talking about is not clear. At some point, it seems that this is a trust-based system, not fully informed consent ones, although you can reformulate it as an informed consent-based system. But then the question is it in line with GDPR? Should we change this? Should we change GDPR? What is the solution? But then also only thinking about GDPR is also a very Eurocentric perspective. There are many other countries in the world with very different legal frameworks. How we can adapt this kind of systems with every single legal framework that we have. Again, maybe we should solve it in a global scale. And for sure, ask me that I'm working at universities, we need funding for all this. We need resources, and we need to access to public budget in order to be able to continue this kind of research. Again, there are many, many, many other socioeconomic challenges. And I believe we should do it together. We, as a part of Expedite project that I talked about, are starting a new hub in Vienna, which is not only about Vienna. There is a movement, My Data Movement, that maybe you're aware of that. And it's a kind of global movement that at least covers partially some of the aspects that I told you. Some of them are from our research. But again, I think we need networks of people who are technical, who are political people, activists, and so on, in order to work together about all of these issues. And we are starting this hub in Vienna in connection to the global hub, and every single person of you, like all of you are invited to contribute in that. And if you want, just write me an email, I will add you to the mailing list, and let's see what we can do together. Plus, as a part of the Expedite project, at least, we are running interviews and, I don't know, conducting focus group studies and try really to understand what are the challenges and drivers, what we can do. And at the end of the year, at least for Austria, the idea is that we want to shape a roadmap and publish that roadmap and also send the roadmap to the parliament, send it to the government, publish it for public people, like every single normal citizen, and make it accessible for people. Again, if you like, you can be involved in this process as well. We just started this 2 months ago, and we'll continue it about another year. And thank you so much.
So. Thank you a lot for your talk. We do have time for questions, so.
No? Okay, thank you. Did you consider data ownership and control in a more broader way, not on an individual level, mm-hmm. but a collective level as well, because we had a talk yesterday morning.
Yeah.
They were referring about this. Do you know this concept?
Whatever that I said, more or less, not whatever, but many of the concepts are also valid about SMEs, like small companies or NGOs or whatever, like community that we have, or even big companies. Like there also, if you have a small community, either commercial or non-commercial or non-profit ones, you have your own data, and then how you manage it is a very big issue. Yes, in general, we do have this concept. The project focuses on personal data, but in a coming in an upcoming project, most probably we also should deal with that. Plus, we have many different types of collective data that should be considered. Even the personal data could be kind of collective. Yeah, it's a very valid point, actually.
Any further questions?
Do you have a perspective on the Freedom Box project? You probably know this.
Freedom Box?
The Freedom Box project.
I don't know the project.
You didn't hear it.
No.
They try to implement some kind of hardware software solution to gain control of your personal data in social media networks. Mm-hmm. So it's quite old. It's like five years back when they started, and mm-hmm. I don't know many details, so I'm not the best person mm-hmm. To talk about it, but maybe you want to check out what they're about. I see many relations to what your plan seems to be.
Yeah, actually, thanks for that. That would be a very good pointer. And I'm aware of many other similar projects. There are many projects that are going on. The general issue is that normally projects that are out there are very specific, like domain specific, about some, like at the end they will end up to be a platform. I think at least this is my idea. And here the idea is that, would it be possible to make it a real ecosystem that is open and distributed, and it's about many different types of data? If it wouldn't be simple enough, people wouldn't use it. You know, people would not use 30 different platforms for managing different types of data. It's a very complex issue, this one. And that's why I understand that many people prefer to start with something simple and do it only for one domain. But yeah, thanks for the pointer. I think we should consider all of these things that have been done, don't doing it again, that for sure.
As an addition to your remark, so that the Freedom Box tries to be very broad, and it's mm-hmm. really, it tries to, we had a talk about that, so maybe you can mm-hmm. have a look in the stream, so not exactly about the Freedom Box, but of one of the participants, and he also talked about mm-hmm. Freedom Box. Regarding some other things you said, what is interesting, so you said the GDPR and the we don't know whether it will have an impact. One interesting thing is that we've learned at the Privacy Week it does already have an impact, because we had a researcher from SBA Research talking about cookies and a worldwide distribution of cookies mm-hmm. and which sites set persistent cookies without asking for permission. And he said, compared to 2016, mm-hmm. that really dropped a lot within the top 100,000 Alexa pages. So that was he said they were very mm-hmm. surprised. Also for Americans, not only for Europeans, but after the GDPR went into business, it just dropped for everyone. So that's something that was very interesting to see.
An answer for that, because I didn't say that it wouldn't have impact. We don't know kind of impact it would have,
course, but
especially in long term.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is that we all learned it ourselves, that there mm-hmm. there are already little things you can mm-hmm. see. I just thought that might be interesting for you as well. Then for the terms of service thing, so for all of you who are interested, so we do have some art there, which is just terms of services, too long didn't mm-hmm. read, and so we have just printed Facebook's and Microsoft's and Google's terms of services to read, so many of them feel like half a wall. So that is actually very funny. Yeah, and so any other questions from the audience or from the internet? Did we have anyone from the stream who had a question? Okay, well then,
thank you.
Thanks very much for your talk, and well, hope to see you again.